We have been doing this podcast now for quite some time, but I have to say the past year has been quite different. Do you not think?
Hugely different. And not just, of course, because of all the things that have been going on in the Eurovision Song Contest, the fact that it's in the UK, the fact that Ukraine won in such amazing circumstances. But of course, that against the backdrop of there is war on this continent for the first time since the Second World War. It's scary. Millions of people's lives have been affected by it. And in this special edition of Norpois, we wanted to reflect the fact that it's been a year since Russia invaded Ukraine. Welcome to Norpois.
Norpois is shameful.
Norpois is lack of respect for Euros.
It's the ultimate humiliation.
The shame that they must be feeling.
Norpois is no fun.
Yes, hello and welcome. I am Laura. That is Martin. This is a sort of Ukraine special, I guess you could say. We've got lots of details about tickets for Eurovision 2023, because that news has come out, and more about the contest. But as Martin said, we do want to reflect that it's been a year since the war in Ukraine. So we are actually going to be speaking to someone a little bit later on in the show who is very linked to that in many ways. Her name's Marta. She works for the BBC Ukrainian team, and she's also a huge Eurovision fan, and that'll be coming up a little bit later.
First, though, to a few little things that have been happening. Ticket news in a moment of sorts, yes. Anyway. But first, hosts who've been announced. Now, every year on this podcast, I get quite annoyed at the number of hosts that they put on, because I reckon it's a two-person job max, I think. How many are there, Cressy?
This year, they've not really changed it, the formula, have they? It's very much still four main hosts, and there will be sort of commentators as well. At least one of them we were sort of all expecting, and that was Graham Norton. Who is the guy who normally does the commentary for BBC. We've also then got Alicia Dixon, and we've got Hannah Waddingham and Julia Sanina. So they're going to be the hosts for the semi-finals and the grand final. And then we've got lovely Mel Giedroyc, who me and Martin bloody love. She was the hosting when there was a BBC show to decide the national selection final, and she always kind of did some farcical things. So she's going to be part of the commentary team when obviously Graham is hosting. They've got quite a few different people, such as Rylan. There is also going to be, by the way, Timur Myroshenko, the commentator in Ukraine. Last year, he commentated from a bunker.
Yes, he did. And that bunker was very loud when Ukraine won.
Was.
I don't know whether you've heard the audio, like he goes, absolutely,
yeah.
He loves it. Interesting on commentary, because you mentioned Graham Norton, who of course is the UK's commentator, has been for many years. He is going to be hosting at the same time, and this is what Terry Wogan did when the UK hosted in 1998. Terry sort of did both. He did the hosting and he continued to do the UK's commentary. So I think Graham Norton kind of wanting to do the same thing, although Terry did the lot, he did both sort of almost single-handedly. Ulrika Johnson was alongside him on the stage.
Yes.
But he did the commentary on his own. Graham Norton having Mel Giedroyc with him. I do wonder, and I'll say it again, is there too many cooks here spoiling the broth? Do you have to have so many people doing the same thing? Do we need two commentators when Graham Norton's hosting? I'm pretty sure that if they put him close enough to the stage, he could do both. Do we need four hosts? Although important that Yulia is part of it, because of course. Ukraine needs to be represented, something we will come on to in a little bit. But there you go, Eurovision hosts announced, and your thoughts, as always, very much wanted. As usual, we'll give you the details of how you can get in touch a little later on. Okay, on to tickets. Now, this is the exciting stuff. People are like, well, come on, when are the tickets going to come out? We need to go. So what do we know, Chris?
So we finally got the news then when they are going to be on sale, and it's Tuesday, the 7th of March. If you've listened to this podcast before then, well done. You can still get tickets. If you didn't, well, get on the website now. It's Tuesday, the 7th of March, and that's for everything. It's going to be two live semi-finals and the grand final, as well as the six previews. And the price range we've got as well. So that's going to range from £90 to £290, and that's for the live semi-finals, and £160 to £380 for the live grand final. What do you make of that, Martin?
Well, it's not too different from what we've seen before.
No.
Obviously, there's some very, very expensive tickets in there.
There always are.
They will go in seconds, as we know.
Yes, they will.
What is quite interesting to see as well is that, and this is a good thing, because we've been talking a lot about how Ukraine is going to be represented, and you think, well, you want as many Ukrainians to be able to go as possible. After all, it is their event. Thousands of tickets, we understand now, will be made available for displaced Ukrainians to actually be able to go. So the UK government kind of stepping in on this. It said that 3,000 tickets are going to go to Ukrainians who've been forced from their homes and are living in the UK. So they will be able to go to one of the live shows. I'm assuming that that then is free.
I believe the cost is being subsidised by the government, but there'll be a £20 charge per sale.
So quite a lot cheaper then, which is good, which means that Ukrainians will be able to attend and there will be a real Ukrainian flavour in the audience as well as on the stage, as we hope there will be.
It's worth saying, it will be at 12 GMT, so midday on the 7th of March. If you're thinking, well, what time? It's going to be a mad rush. We know, outside of this, people, who never are that interested in Eurovision say, oh, well, I'll get a ticket. I might give it a go. You're thinking, no chance. You've got to be on it. So good luck to everyone who is going to give it a go. I mean, our advice would be try and go for some of the semi-finals, because that's what we've actually been to. And we've always had a great time, haven't we?
We've had a wonderful time. Yeah, we've not been to a final. We always go to the semi-finals because they're slightly easier to get tickets for. The tickets are slightly cheaper. And it depends why you want to go, right? And we always wanted to just see some of the acts, experience being in the arena, wherever it was. And we kind of quite liked watching the final at home. That might change this year. Mm. We might try and go for the final. But normally we do try and go to the semis.
It is worth saying, if you don't get a ticket, as we said, there's the Eurovision Village. Apparently there's going to be a 2-week festival taking place, including a submarine parade. I mean, I'm guessing that'll be linked to the Beatles and Yellow Submarines, but they just put this in the BBC article, including a submarine parade. It's like as if that's what we just do every year. And apparently a rave, which will take place simultaneously in Kyiv as well. Something for everyone.
Presumably the submarines will not be submerged if they're parading. Otherwise it'd be quite boring.
Boring and also a bit strange.
Well, with this being our special programme to mark the first anniversary of the war in Ukraine, we thought it'd be really good to speak to somebody who is there a lot, who is Ukrainian and knows a lot about the way that that country and the people in that country are responding to the war, and also is a Eurovision fan as well and has many connections to the competition. So time to have a chat with Marta Shokolo, who's from BBC Ukraine, who's just been in Kyiv, back now though in Warsaw, where she's been since the start of the war. You then, Marta, are like one of now millions and millions of Ukrainians who've had to leave your country to flee to safety.
Yes, that's right. I'm one of those Ukrainian refugees who are living elsewhere, waiting for war to end. I just got back from Kyiv. I've been to Kyiv last week and got the feeling how it is there. It's rather sad, I would say, coming back home as a guest. But well, for now, it's our reality, I'm afraid.
Were you able to sort of meet up with anyone there that you hadn't seen for a while? What was it like in Kyiv?
Every time I go home, it's a mixture of great joy and big sadness, because it's not the same as it was before war. And you can feel the war is there, but people are very... But at the same time, I feel so much positive energy and love from people when I'm there, because it's just amazing how people managing the resilience, how they carry on with their lives, with their businesses. They are positive. So in a way, we are sometimes more sad here being living abroad than people who are living there. So every time I go, I'm just have this lots of positive energy from people.
This is, of course, a Eurovision fan podcast, and we want to talk about the Eurovision Song Contest as well. What are your memories of Eurovision yourself?
I think I've been watching Eurovision. So I can't even remember since when. Probably when I was a student. The first Eurovision I really remember, the one I worked as a young radio journalist for BBC Ukrainian, that was back in 2005 when we were hosting our first Eurovision after Ruslana won. I would say Eurovision for Ukrainians, it's more about politics rather than songs. I think it's people are, got very excited about Eurovision in terms of who is voting for who. We've had for years the rivalry between Russia and Ukraine, so we would always watch on the night. So how many votes Russia gave to Ukraine, and or how many votes Ukraine gave to Russia or some other countries. It was always fun. For me, Eurovision, it's always like a very nice and positive thing. I watched it with my friends sometimes. But the one I worked for was really one thing to remember because it was probably the first such a big event in Kyiv. And we had many doubts before that if Ukraine will be able to host Eurovision on the certain level, et cetera, et cetera. But it went great and it was amazing. And since then, I think Ukraine become a very strong competitor in Eurovision Song Contests. So for us, even now in the middle of war, there is a big interest for Eurovision among Ukrainians.
It's interesting you say that for Ukrainians, it's all about the politics, because we always say, oh, it's not about politics. People aren't, but it's because of the songs. But, you know, there is that element there. And certainly, I think, you know, last year, there definitely was, you know, there was such this outpouring of feeling. So you were talking about 2005 and working at that event. What was the atmosphere like? What was it like working at that?
It was amazing. It was it's probably the best time in Kyiv in May. It was really unusual for me to see so many, first of all, so many foreigners at the same time in Kyiv, probably. And the whole atmosphere was amazing. And it was a bit unusual, I would say, for Ukrainians. But still, as we see from after that, we hosted many other events like European Football Champion in 2012. Ukrainians, I would say, are very good hosts in general, in not just for such big events, but just as in normal life. We always try to feed people. Yeah, there was a lovely event and lots of nice music, although Ukraine that year absolutely failed in terms of the singers who were singing that year.
Well, but, you can't have everything, can you?
Yeah, exactly.
These things happen. I just wonder to what extent as well, and especially thinking about that competition where Ukraine was the host, there's obviously been a big debate in Ukraine surrounding a closer relationship with Russia or a closer relationship with Europe. That, of course, a very different conversation now. But back in 2005, to what extent do you think that Eurovision kind of was part of that conversation and shaped that conversation with Ukrainians?
At that time, we were still neighboring countries. Not the enemies. There is always has been this element of sort of rivalry and following who is voting for whom. It's, I would say, it's like a competition of the close neighbors for Ukraine. So we would always watch out. Oh, this country didn't vote for Ukraine. Okay, but they did vote for Russia. So we've always had this rivalry, but not to the extent that we had in a couple of last years. And of course, now we don't have Russia in Eurovision at all. But now Ukrainians would watch for those who still sort of in that pro-Russian sphere, I would say.
Well, talk to us a little bit then about Ukraine winning last year and how that felt. Where were you when Ukraine won last year?
I was already in Poland. I was, I would say, early on my early stages of refugee life in Poland. We were still, me and my son, at that time he was 10. So we were still living in at the hotel. We had very small room. And I remember we were watching this Eurovision with him on sitting on our bed. Next day, he needed to go to school, but we said, okay, fine, it doesn't really matter. We are watching Eurovision. So we watched that Eurovision, and it felt really emotional. I remember I was texting with my friends, and like many friends from UK, for example, texted me and saying, oh, Marta, this is amazing. I think Ukraine will win. Well, I was pretty sure that we would win, of course, in that circumstances, that was sort of quite obvious. But still, it was such an emotional evening. And I remember when we got to this sort of moment of victory, my son was jumping on the bed and shouting so loud that I was really worried that neighbors from the next rooms will come and say something, but nobody came. It was interesting mixture of joy and at the same time sadness. We were still didn't quite understand where we are, why we're here, we're not home, and it felt a bit surreal, I would say, as all our life during the last year.
And take me back, because we are talking a year on from the invasion, take me back to that moment, to a year ago. It juxtaposes, right, the elation, the happiness that you had when Ukraine won, but there you are in a situation you never expected to be in. Take me back to that moment of invasion and some of the things that you had to go through as the war began.
I've been thinking back a lot in last days, because it's been a year, and I was sort of looking back on my year. Very often I tell to my friends that this year is like some sort of a movie. Sometimes it's like a big tragedy, sometimes it's like a black comedy. It's a mixture, it's such a big mixture of different emotions. I left my home on the second day of war. I was absolutely terrified, and I just left with a small suitcase with my son. We went to stay in with our relatives in the village, then we moved to the western Ukraine, then we crossed the border, then we went to Slovakia, then from Slovakia we came to Poland. And since then we've been living here. We're definitely traumatized, but even amid of this horrors that we are watching as a journalist, because we can't avoid this sort of news, we can't hide from it, we are living there, although we're physically in Poland, for example, mentally we're still in Ukraine and we are following all this news. Even amidst of this sadness and big pain, we do find time for some very good laughs and joy. We had our work chat where we sharing all sorts of memes and jokes about war, sometimes very inappropriate, but but we still laugh. Yeah, we still laugh a lot. So I would say my last year was full of sadness, was full of tears, but at the same time, it was full of great laughs and joy.
Well, Marta, thank you so much for sparing the time to talk to us. We're both very sorry that you're in the situation that you and so many Ukrainians are in right now. And we really wish that we could be in Kyiv in May celebrating and having the Eurovision Song Contest there. But we still have our fingers crossed that the event goes really well and celebrates Ukraine in as big a way as is possible. Thank you so much for coming on our podcast.
Thank you. Good luck.
Well, as we've been away for a little bit, we've got more songs to zip through and have a quick listen to and give our reaction to. So let's kick off, shall we, first of all, with Lithuania. And this one is by Monika Linkti. I don't know if I said that right. I do apologise. And Stay. Let's have a listen to this.
This is nice. This, it kind of starts, as you heard there, quite quite mellow, quite slow, and then it comes in a little bit more. She looks a bit like Anne-Marie, do you think?
Oh, a little bit, yes, yes. I actually, you know, Lithuania, I think, has done really pretty well in the contest recently and has sort of really stepped up their game. And I don't know if this is quite on the level of the Roop, but I do still like this. And I think she's got a nice melody. She looks kind of quite confident about it. And I don't know if this will get lost a little bit amongst everything else, because it's quite a sort of dainty song, quite, you know, pleasant, nice. But I think if they, you know, try and lift it a little bit, it will be quite a nice one.
France next then, and yes, we always wonder what's going to happen with France. Are they going to go for something absolutely naff, or are they going to pull it out of the bag? Let's find out from Lazara and Évidemment.
Évidemment, toutes ces belles promesses que j'entends, ce n'est que du vent. Évidemment, car après le beau temps vient la pluie, c'est ce qu'on oublie.
Well, I have to say, I like this a lot, Martin.
It's all right now. It's all right.
You're not happy about it. It takes a little while to get going. That's the only thing. Some people's interest might be lost. But when it comes in with that funky beat, and it, you know, the title is Évidemment, very, very good, I think. I think it's going to do well, Évidemment. It's got that catchiness that you need. I'm looking forward to seeing how they stage this, what they do with it. She's got a bit of sass to her walk. Thoughts, Martin?
She's got a bit of sass to her walk.
She's sassy. She's very
kind
French.
She is very French. She's kind of they're kind of 1920s vibes in a way.
Yes, a little bit in what she's wearing, you mean?
Yeah, in what she's wearing, kind of how she, I suppose, how she's sort of holding herself in the way she's performing.
Very just, chic.
Yeah, exactly. But she's, you know. Chic is the word I'm looking for. Thank you. Yeah. No, I like that. It's kind of harking back to disco in there.
But in a good way, because I think sometimes Eurovision acts hark back to disco and it's very old-fashioned, but this is kind of a bit more modern, and I think that will play well with the crowds.
Australia, and this is Voyager with a song called Promise.
Promise me you'll hold me till I die.
So I think this is another one which takes a little while to get going, but once it does, I quite like it. I like the funky bass line. It's quite a different path they've taken for this than previous, where they've gone sort of quite ballady, and this one's a bit more upbeat, and I like that, but I still feel it's, I don't know, a little bit generic, maybe? What do you think, Martin?
I would say, when I first heard it, I thought, well, oh, this is very Eurovision.
Yes.
And then I was like, I don't really know what that means,
what I've said there. What does that mean?
It's a real kind of Euro, there's Eurodance in there, isn't there? You can imagine being in a club in Iceland. And then the rock comes in and you go,
yes, it's true.
Bit of rock here. I do threw that in
there. Yeah, they've just thrown everything at it, haven't they? It's true. The beginning sounds very, I thought they were going to get sort of launch into, we are the heroes of our time, and then they pull it back, and like you say, they go a bit rocky. I think they will do well, actually, but I don't think it's a winner, but I think there's enough interesting elements in there that will make it stand out, I think.
Finland. I like Finland. Will I like this Finland? This is a lovely little song.
What an intro.
Yes. Thank you. I do my best here. Yes. This is by a group called Carija, and it's called Cha Cha Cha.
Well, what can we say about this? And I think
half
of it will be watching it, because if you're just hearing that and you're like, oh, that's kind of, you know, sort of catches, interesting, cha-cha-cha. It's quite simple, isn't it, really? Mm. But you got to watch it, because we've got this guy, Karicha, in a sort of weird green matador's top. But, you know, half of it's been cut off. Half of it's been lost in the wash. And he's got this bowl cut. Now, the Finnish are always pretty well known in Eurovision for doing kind of more rockier numbers. And this is the case here, although you have got a bit of that sort of dance beat as well. He's in a sort of weird wooden crate pen. And he's sort of just sort of growling around this pen and shouting cha-cha-cha with his bowl cut haircut. Martin, thoughts?
Now, this is probably going to be quite a niche reference here because I don't think many people would have seen this. But have you ever seen a comedy series called Herbert Clunkerdunk? It's this really niche guy. And he's like this surreal comedian, and it's a sitcom about like this character, Herbert Clunkerdunk, which is played by this guy. It is proper, proper bonkers. Mm. That's what this is. It's proper, proper bonkers, but in the most wonderful Eurovision of ways.
Yes.
It's kind of angry, even though it's every... I don't understand it, but I'm completely on board with it.
I am too. I really like it. And you need these kind of wacky things in Eurovision. Otherwise, it's just a song contest, isn't it? But I do actually think the song is quite catchy. I'll be interested to see what on earth is he going to do the same thing? Why is he wearing this weird sort of cut out green top? I've no idea, but there you go. That's Finland's entry there. And we've got one more for you as well. Let's take a little listen to San Marino.
Right, this is Like an Animal by Peaked Jax, which is, I don't know what's going on with the sound there, I have to say, but it's, anyway, that, by the by, it's all, I don't think I really have very much to say about this. It's just sort of...
It's quite bog standard, isn't it? As a just a normal kind of poppy, rocky song, you could potentially hear that out on the radio. It's quite inoffensive. I don't think it's going to trouble the top very much. It's they've gone for quite a rocky approach in recent years. You remember last year, they were on a mechanical bull,
yes,
San Marino, and tried to add a bit of sort of theatre to it. Not so much this time. It's very sort of a straight rock band kind of vibe. It's all right. That's what all we could say for San Marino, I think.
I just feel like they've blown all the budget on the mechanical bull.
Yeah, they have. And they're like, oh, what are we going to do now? We're still in it.
Yeah, we need to save money this year
to
pay the loan off. I don't know. I think that could have been what's going on. I mean, it's fine, isn't it? It's not a bad song. It's just, I don't know, it's doing anything particularly special for me. Your thoughts may differ, though, of course. And as usual, we want to hear from you. Here's how you get in touch and what you've been saying so far.
Well, thank you, I should say, first of all, to our Patreons, because if you are Patreon, you can speak to us and get in touch with us. Thank you very much for all of that, and we do appreciate you sticking around with us. But yeah, thank you very much for that. And how to do it? Well, you literally just go to patreon.com/nullpoir, chuck us a quid a month. And we've got a message here from Jem, who says, has first of all got a little correction corner himself, says, I meant Romania was crazy in the last video, not Slovenia. He had written Slovenia. He actually meant Romania. Ah. It's an easy mistake to make, Jem. They're so similar.
Is it?
In writing them out. Okay, so Romania, Jem thought was crazy, said, some more thoughts. France is the best song at the moment. I would say, I possibly agree with you there, Jem. Jem also says, but compared to other years, still, the pool's quite thin. I don't know if I agree with that point, but Jem says, the Aussie entry announced today, I'm very disappointed as an Oz resident. Jem's living in Australia. I was hoping for a dance diva. Instead, we got meh. Excited. Oh, and then Jem goes on to say he's excited for more entrants. I don't know if I agree Australia's mayor, but it definitely isn't a dance diva.
No dance diva, but yeah, I wasn't against it, I don't think. I think I'm okay with that. Thank you so much for getting in touch. And yeah, there's Patreon. It'd be lovely to have you on Patreon. Other ways of getting in contact as well. We're on Twitter, we're on Instagram, and we've got an email address as well, haven't we?
We do. Guess what, guys? We got an email. Yeah, we do. We are on nullpoir.com/podcast@gmail.com. You can also, as Martin says, contact us on Twitter. We are at Poir Null, and on Instagram, Null Poir Podcast. Thank you very much, everybody. We want to hear your reactions to all of this and about Ukraine as well. How do you think it should be hosted in Liverpool for Ukraine. What are your thoughts on what Marta had to say? Will you be getting tickets as well? And let us know if you do get tickets. We'd love to hear from you. Get in contact with us and we'll be speaking to you very soon with more. Well, the next time we speak to you, we can say whether we got tickets, can't we, Martin?
Oh, yes. I look forward to disappointing you. I mean, I look forward to getting those tickets.
Oh.
Right. Thank you so much for your continued support to this podcast. It's really, really good fun. And we hope you've enjoyed this particular edition. We'll see you on the next one, on the next time, here on
Norpois.